Silva exclaimed, unrolling her mat on the floor. Fletcher smiled, glad she had put herself in with the commoners. Rory shuffled his feet and clenched his fists.
I'm sick of being told how unlucky I am to have Malachi,
he whispered with obvious frustration.
Why don't you begin, Silva? I will tell you if you are doing everything correctly. It is a relatively simple act, once you know what to do,
Lovett suggested. Silva kneeled on the floor without hesitation and laid her gloved hands on the leather mat. The goggles sat awkwardly over her long ears, but she didn't seem to mind. Fletcher was sure she couldn't wait to be under Sariel's protection once again after last night's debacle. Taking a deep, steadying breath, Silva stared at the pentacle until it flickered with soft, violet light.
Watch how she pushes the mana through her hands, into the leather, and through to the pentacle. She will know when it is time to push the demon through once the pentacle is glowing steadily.
The pentacle gleamed with blue light, yet nothing happened for almost half a minute. The only sound was Silva's labored breathing as she glared at the shining star. Then, without warning, a canid's form grew into the space out of nothingness, expanding from a pinprick of light to a large glowing shape in half a second. The figure shone white, then the color faded, and Sariel stood above the pentacle. Her four eyes focused on Silva, and then the canid leaped onto her, sending her tumbling to the ground. The demon licked her face and howled. Fletcher wondered whether Sariel was aware of what Silva had gone through yesterday. Maybe she had just missed her owner.
Obviously, your demon needs some discipline and training, but good work, nonetheless. I shall summon my demon, Lysander, so that I can demonstrate how to infuse. Stand back, please,
Lovett announced. Silva and Sariel moved aside, and the rest of the group took several steps backwards.
The larger your demon is, the more difficult the summoning. Of course, in the field, you won't be able to wear protective clothing. But it is best to take precautions when we can, especially with untrained novitiates such as yourselves,
Lovett said, kneeling on the corner of the summoning leather.
The main reason for all the protection is for using keyed pentacles, but we won't get onto that until later.
She fished a pair of black lens goggles and a leather cap from a pouch in her apron, then put them on firmly. The pentacle glowed again, white sparks spitting and sizzling on the leather around it. A white orb appeared above it, and to Fletcher's astonishment, a demon formed in just a few seconds. The creature had the body, tail, and back legs of a lion, but the head, wings, and front talons of an eagle. It was the size of a large horse, with tawny brown feathers that blended into the golden fur halfway down the creature's back.
I, too, was blessed with a rare demon, a griffin. But he was not given to me. I started with a mite, just as some of you have. Do not be disheartened by your modest beginnings. Mites are fiercely loyal creatures, and you can control many of them at once. Lysander requires all my concentration just to keep him under control. Major Goodwin will teach you more on demon control in your demonology classes.
Genevieve smiled and lifted Azura to her lips, kissing the beetle's cobalt carapace.
Does that mean you were a commoner too?
Rory asked, barely able to tear his eyes away from the majestic creature.
No. Although I was present when the first commoners arrived at Vokans. I am the third daughter of the Lovitz of Calgary, a small fiefdom in northern Hominum. By strange coincidence, my father was blessed with several adept children. I was the youngest, so I was given the weakest demon by my father. I'm glad he did, though. If he had not, I would never have specialized in demonic capture. You can all own a powerful demon such as this, as long as you work hard.
She wrapped her arm around Lysander, who nuzzled his beak against her chest fondly. The griffin's eyes were deep amber, as large and intelligent as an owl's. They flicked from student to student with curiosity, at last resting the special attention on Ignatius.
Now I shall demonstrate how to infuse. It is almost a reverse of the procedure. The pentacle must be pointed directly at the demon, and it cannot be too far away. This is why we have them standing on the summoning leathers. However, if Lysander were to hover several meters above the pentacle, I would be able to manage it.
She kneeled and laid her hands on the lever once more, sputtering the pentacle into life.
You must first push mana into the pentacle. Soon you will feel an obstacle between your demon's consciousness and your own. Once you feel that, pull the demon through it.
She heaved with effort, and Lysander glowed, then dissipated into strands of white light that flowed into her hands.
That's all there is to it,
Lovett announced, her forehead beading with sweat. They applauded her skill, but Fletcher was filled with apprehension when she turned her steely eyes onto him.
Fletcher, you shall try first, as your demon needs to rest the most. Arcturus tells me you are unusually gifted at spellcraft. Let us see if the same holds true for infusion.
Lovett pointed at the floor in front of him. Fletcher slowly unrolled his summoning mat and sent Ignatius onto it. The demon sat there, uttering a nervous chirr as he felt Fletcher's anxiety. Fletcher did as he had been instructed, channeling the mana into the leather mat. It glowed a fierce violet, steady and unwavering.
Do you feel it, Fletcher?
Lovett asked, placing a steadying hand on Fletcher's shoulder.
I feel it,
Fletcher grunted back through gritted teeth. In his mana-charged state, the light was almost blinding, filling his vision with the glowing star.
Pull him through. You may struggle initially, but that is normal for the first infusion.
Lovett's voice sounded as if it were coming from a great distance. The mana pulsed through his veins with each beat of his heart, thundering in his ears. His link with Ignatius was blocked. He grasped at the demon's mind, then, with a colossal effort, drew him in. For a moment, he strained, hissing between gritted teeth. It felt as if Ignatius was caught in an elastic web. After what seemed like an age, there was a gentle snap, and the demon's consciousness merged with his own. It was like sinking into a warm bath.
Well done, Fletcher. You can rest now,
Lovett whispered in his ear. Fletcher pressed his head into the soft leather, breathing in deep lungfuls of air. He could hear the others clapping and yelling incoherently. His mind was filled with extraordinary happiness and clarity, as if he were drugged to the gills.
What Fletcher will be feeling now is the temporary acceleration of merging consciousnesses with another. His demon is within him, yet he will be barely aware of it in a few minutes. Ignatius will see everything that Fletcher is seeing, though he will understand very little of it. This can be extremely useful should you need to summon in the midst of battle, as demons are prepared for the situation as soon as they reappear,
Lovett lectured, pacing back and forth behind him.
Some summoners experience flashes of demonic memory in the months after they first infuse their demons. This, too, shall pass, but is an important part of how we learn about the ether. If this happens to you, make sure to take note of every detail and tell myself and Major Goodwin all of it. We need every bit of information about the life of demons we can get, she continued.
Fletcher stood with difficulty and walked back to the others, his head still spinning. Seraph patted him on the back with a jealous grin on his face.
Well done. I guess you're the one to beat,
he whispered.
Not likely. I think that almost killed me,
Fletcher replied, feeling the warm glow of Ignatius within him. It was strange. He could barely distinguish between Ignatius's consciousness and his own. The thread no longer connected them. They flowed into each other like the meeting of two rivers. Othello gave him an encouraging smile, and even Silver touched him lightly on the arm before turning her attention back to Sariel. The elf buried her face and hands in her demon's golden fur, clinging onto the canid as if her life depended on it. Fletcher suspected it would be a long while before she would want to infuse Sariel again.
"Now, Othello and Fletcher, let's have a look at those heads of yours,"
Lovett said, beckoning them forward. Once they were in front of her, she whispered under her breath,
"Is there anything you boys need to tell me? You and Silver look like you've been in the wars, and I should know."
"It's nothing we couldn't handle," Fletcher assured her, looking to Othello for support.
"We dealt with it,"
the dwarf agreed. Lovett eyed them for a moment before inclining her head in acceptance.
"Well, if you ever change your minds, you can talk to me,"
she murmured, looking them in the eyes.
"You don't have to fight your battles alone."
Then she stepped back and raised her voice.
"Gather round, everyone. I'm going to use the healing spell. You might as well watch."
The rest of the commoners approached them, chattering with excitement at the opportunity to see another spell. Othello removed his bandage, revealing a jagged cut across his temple. Fletcher winced at the sight of it. He hadn't realized how bad the wound was.
"Watch closely now,"
Lovett announced. She etched a heart-shaped symbol in the air with weird light, then pointed it at Othello's gash.
"The healing spell is perfect for cuts, bruises, and even internal injuries, although it won't do anything against poisons and diseases,"
Lovett declared, knitting her brows together in concentration.
"It requires a lot of mana and takes a while to perform, especially for deeper injuries."
She exhaled, and golden light flowed from the symbol to Othello's head. Nothing happened for almost 30 seconds. Then, to Fletcher's astonishment, the wound began to stitch together, sealing itself until the skin was completely healed, leaving nothing but a crust of dried blood. The group clapped, cheering at the feat. Lovett turned her eyes to Fletcher's forehead, but shook her head.
"You'll have to let that heal on its own, Fletcher," she explained, pointing at the swelling. "You may have a fracture. The healing spell can cause broken bones to fuse incorrectly, leaving you permanently disfigured. Best not to risk it."
Fletcher nodded in agreement, fingering the lump on his head with a wince.
"Right, let's get the rest of you trained up. Once you've mastered infusion, we can move on to the fun stuff,"
Lovett exclaimed, clapping her hands.
"What happens then?"
Rory asked, as he unraveled his summoning leather onto the floor. Lovett removed her goggles and smiled at them mysteriously.
"We're going to enter the ether."
33. Their next lesson was with Major Goodwin, a blustering but strict old man with a red nose and bristling white goatee. He strode around the lecture hall, belying his portly frame.
"Demonology is key in supporting your spellcraft and ether work. It concerns the identification, understanding, and upbringing of all demons, as well as the study of the geography and diversity of the ether. This includes demonic impact upon the summoner's mana levels and their fulfillment."
He spoke in short bursts that left the front row of nobles flecked with spit. Fletcher was glad to see that Tarquin was directly in the firing line, and judging by the disgusted look on his face, he did not enjoy being bathed in saliva. Unfortunately, Fletcher's smile drew Goodwin's attention.
"You, boy, what is a summoner's fulfillment?"
he asked, pointing at Fletcher.
His happiness?" Fletcher suggested.
"Wasn't it obvious?"
"A laughable answer. A summoner's fulfillment relates to how many demons they are able to harness. I had hoped that someone fortunate enough to be gifted with a rare demon would take time to research this before their first lesson. Obviously, I was mistaken."
"A shame,"
Goodwin said, shaking his head. Fletcher felt his face burn as he reddened with embarrassment. Isadora turned and smirked at him from the row below.
Could someone who came prepared explain? How about you, Malik?
Goodwin questioned.
Sir, every summoner is born with varying capacities to absorb demonic energy,
a tall, dark-skinned noble said.
For example, Captain Lovett only has the capacity to harness and control one griffin and one mite. Another summoner might be able to harness and control two griffins, because they have a higher fulfillment level than she does.
Correct. The old King Alfric has a fulfillment level of 100, the highest ever recorded since we began classifying demons. Using the example of Captain Lovett again, we know that she has a fulfillment level of 11, given that her griffin is a class 10 demon and her mite is a class 1 demon. What else?
Fulfillment levels can improve,
Malik said after a pause.
How?
I don't know, sir.
Goodwin took a long, angry sniff through his nose.
Not good enough. The answer is that fulfillment levels grow naturally, at varying rates for each summoner as time goes by. This process can be sped up by the hard work of the summoner in question. Lovett was not born with the fulfillment level required to harness and control a griffin. She had to work up to it by the constant use of spellcraft, entering the ether, and regularly battling and harnessing other demons. Some summoners spend their entire lives with a fulfillment level of no higher than 5, whilst others start at 5 and work their way up to 20 or so. Well, why aren't you writing this down?
Goodwin shouted, sending a fresh spray of spit into the crowd. The others pulled parchment from their satchels and began to scribble furiously. Fletcher stared at his hands miserably, realizing he had none. Everyone else had known they were coming to Vokan's weeks ago and had brought the correct materials. But Fletcher had forgotten to buy some in the few days he had been there. Goodwin bristled as he saw Fletcher's inactivity.
Fletcher, is it?
He growled.
Yes, sir,
Fletcher replied, ducking his head in embarrassment.
Whilst the others are busy learning, perhaps you can tell me what happens to a demon once his summoner is killed.
Fletcher contemplated the question, eager to redeem himself, even if by guesswork. He knew that dead demons were often preserved in jars and sold as curiosities. But surely something must happen when the summoner died and left the demon unharnessed. Unless it was a trick question. Fletcher remembered Rotherham's story about Baker and the demon that would not leave his side, even in death.
Perhaps it was a trick.
Nothing, sir,
Fletcher replied confidently. But his heart sank as he saw Tarquin smirk. He knew he was wrong before Goodwin had even opened his mouth.
Preposterous! Do you know anything about demons at all? When a summoner dies, his demon will remain in our world for just a few hours before it is reabsorbed back into the ether. To remain in our world alive, a demon must be harnessed. It is that bond that keeps them here. Otherwise, they will simply fade away. Or did you think there were wild demons running about out there?
Goodwin spoke loudly for the benefit of the others. And in response, the scratch of their quills increased in intensity. Goodwin turned away from him in disgust and stalked to the wall behind him. There were several long scrolls stacked against it, one of which he picked up, unrolled, and pinned to the wall. On the front of it was a detailed diagram of a mite in black and white, with various statistics and numbers below it.
Today, we are going to learn about mites. The very lowest level of demon, other than their various cousins at the bottom of the food chain, which are not worth capturing. I know we have two mites here today, specifically scarabs, the most powerful of the mite family. Low in mana, size and strength, but useful as scouts. Very good at distracting the enemy during a fight, especially if they go for the eyes. Genevieve and Rory own juvenile scarabs, but in a few months they will develop stingers which can cause low-level paralysis and not an insignificant amount of pain. A swarm of 10 stings can take down a bull orc, so do not underestimate the power of their poison.
Terrific,
Rory said aloud, then covered his mouth with his hands. The others laughed, except for Goodwin, who sniffed irritably. The lesson continued in this vein for several hours, noting down various statistics and discussing the feeding and breeding habits of the scarab. Fletcher watched despondently as page after page of notes piled up on the others' desks, until Othello nudged him with his foot and whispered,
"Don't worry, you can copy mine later."
During lunch, Fletcher managed to borrow a spare quill from Rory and a swathe of parchment from Genevieve, so he was better prepared for the second half of the lesson. But when they returned, Fletcher was surprised to find Scipio waiting in the room for them, with an impatient look on his face.
"Fletcher, you are to report to the library. You are yet to hand in James Baker's book, despite being told to bring it to the librarian several days ago," he said irritably. "Major Goodwin, do you mind at all?"
"Not with this cadet,"
Goodwin harumphed.
"He has been a disappointment."
Scipio raised his eyebrows at Fletcher, but said nothing. Fletcher gathered up his things, feeling himself flush with humiliation. Had he really made such a bad impression?
"Bloody hell. They take late books very seriously at the library here, huh?"
Rory muttered in his ear.
"I will meet you there. Be sure to bring the book," Scipio said to Fletcher,
then strode from the room without a backwards glance. Fletcher hurried up the stairs, cursing his forgetfulness. He had forgotten to write to Burden, forgotten to hand the book in, and, more importantly, he had forgotten to examine the book itself. He reminded himself that the sheep wagon had been too dark to read in, a fact that had annoyed him greatly. It had been a torrid and fettered journey with nothing to distract himself with, other than his own thoughts. Even so, Fletcher had definitely had time to read it last night. By the time he had rushed to the top of the tower, collected his book, and made his way back to the library, Fletcher was panting. He steadied himself against the wall and tried to compose himself. He didn't want to lower Scipio's opinion of him any more than he already had, by walking in all hot and flustered.
"What are you waiting for, Fletcher? In with you!"
Scipio barked from behind him, making him jump. The provost laid his hand on Fletcher's shoulder and propelled him forward. They walked into the library together, the musty smell of old books bringing memories of Pelt's crypt back to Fletcher's mind. Had all that only happened a few weeks ago?
"Ah, here you are. I must say, I've been looking forward to this. Thank you for bringing him, Provost Scipio,"
came a voice from behind the shelves. Moments later, a middle-aged woman with curly blonde hair and gold-rimmed spectacles emerged from behind the bookshelves. She had a matronly appearance and an open, honest face.
"This is Dame Rose Fairhaven, the librarian and nurse at Vaucans. She has been with us a long time," Scipio murmured.
"Come now, Provost. You make me sound like an old lady. It hasn't been that long. Well, bring it over here. Let's have a look."
She beckoned them both over to a low table illuminated by a plethora of bright candles.
"Set it down here where we can all see. Arcturus has explained the book's origin to me. I remember James Baker. Quiet boy, always drawing. He had the heart of an artist, not a warrior. He was never cut out to be a soldier. I'm sorry to hear what happened to him."
She sighed and sat down beside the table. Fletcher set the book down and they joined her, leaning over as she flipped through the book with a practiced air.
"This is incredible,"
she breathed. The pages were filled with intricate sketches of demons and spidery handwriting underneath. The level of detail was extraordinary, with statistics and measurements, much like the large mite scroll that Major Goodwin had been teaching from.
He had been studying demons from the orcs' part of the ether, their physiology, their characteristics. He must have been dissecting any preserved orc demons he could find. This is exactly what we need for our archives. Most battle mages seem to have forgotten one of the most important of a soldier's sayings. Know thy enemy. Perhaps now that it is all on paper, they will actually take that to heart.
Fletcher grinned, glad that he had finally been able to contribute, even indirectly.
That is excellent news, Dame Fairhaven, although I had hoped he would have given us more information on how he found the summoning scroll for Fletcher's salamander,
Scipio said, with a hint of disappointment in his voice. Actually, Dame Fairhaven, if you turn to the back, there should be something about it there. I think Baker began a diary towards the end, Fletcher suggested. She flipped through the book until the very last few pages, where the diagrams ended and the pages were filled with lines of text.
Wait, what's this?
Dame Fairhaven said, pulling out the leathery summoning scroll and turning it over in the light.
I wouldn't touch that if I were you, Fletcher stuttered.
I know what this is, Fletcher,
Dame Fairhaven said, stroking the material with fascination.
I have seen one before, many years ago. Inscribing a scroll through scarification of an enemy's skin was the usual way the old orc shamans used to gift demons to their apprentices. It's not so common these days, though. Let's see what Baker had to say on the matter.
Her eyes scanned the pages as Fletcher and Scipio waited patiently. She seemed to be reading at a terrific pace, but then she was a librarian, after all. Not too long after, she shut the book and laid it aside.
Poor James, she said, shaking her head. He became very depressed by the end. Nobody would take his research seriously. The other battle mages didn't respect him because he was such a weak summoner. He was cursed with a fulfillment level of 3, poor fellow. I suspect his ill-fated mission into the forest was a desperate attempt to encounter an orc shaman and somehow discover the keys that they use.
Foolish of him, Scipio scoffed, throwing his hands in the air. The orc shamans know we want to find out what keys they use, so they never enter the ether anywhere near the front lines. Now tell me about this scroll. It's what all the fuss is about, after all.
It says here he found the scroll buried underground in an old orc encampment. Earlier in the diary, it says that he had found a lot of bones at the same site, both orc and human. My suspicion is that the orc's encampment was attacked in the middle of the demon gifting ceremony, and the scroll was buried underground in a mass grave. The men who filled the grave probably did not know its significance.
Dame Fairhaven said, stroking the scroll with morbid fascination.
Useless, Scipio grumbled,
his voice full of disappointment.
A fluke event. I doubt we will find any other scrolls by digging up old bones. Make a copy of the book without the diary and send it out to the battle mages.
Yes, sir. I will start it tonight. Although I will need to hire a few scribes to get these drawings right,
Dame Fairhaven replied, flicking through the book absent-mindedly.
Do it. At least some good has come of all this,
Scipio said as he walked from the room.
As well as having you, of course, Fletcher,
he added from the corridor outside. Fletcher eyed the book greedily. He couldn't believe he had left it so late to read it, long though it was. Dame Fairhaven continued to finger the pages. Then as Fletcher shifted on his feet, she looked up at him, as if she had forgotten he was there.
Sorry, Fletcher. I am just so taken with this book.
Thank you so much for bringing it to me. I'm afraid I will have to keep it until enough copies have been made, which should take a few months. You can have it back after that.
34. Fletcher had hoped to see what demons the nobles possessed when Lovett finally decided that all the commoners had mastered infusion. Sadly, she had always ordered them to infuse their demons before parting the curtain. He had been surprised to find that Rory and Genevieve were adept at infusion, while Seraph, Othello, and Atlas had taken several tries to manage it. It made a lot of sense, as the more powerful the demon, the more difficult it was to infuse them. As the lessons progressed, Fletcher had begun to size up his fellow students. The nobles were proficient, yet lazy, content with their current level of expertise, and complacent in their learning. In contrast, the commoners were learning at a furious pace, absorbing every bit of information that they could. Unfortunately, practice was the greatest teacher in both spellcraft and infusion, so progress was slow. Still, there were several frontrunners amongst Fletcher's friends. Silver and Othello were naturals, earning approving remarks from the teachers in almost every lesson. The same was true for the more cerebral demonology classes. The pair practically lived in the library, hunting through old tomes for hidden knowledge. Fletcher learned as much from them as he did from Major Goodwin. As for the human commoners, Fletcher and Seraph led the pack, though it was through the dint of hard work rather than natural talent. The others had taken to whiling away their weekends in Corsalum, buying gifts and necessities and sending them back to their family. Seraph's family appeared to be wealthy already, and he had visited Corsalum in the past, so he preferred to spend time studying with Fletcher. He was a good-natured lad with a shameless sense of humor, earning many a disapproving stare from Silver and Othello as they read in the dusty silence of the library.
"Gather round, everyone!"
Lovett shouted, tearing Fletcher away from his musings. Four servants had brought a round stone table to the center of the room. It was covered in a white sheet, but Fletcher could see a large convex bump in the center of it. Everyone found a place along the edge, although it was tight. Isadora made a face as a sweaty Atlas squeezed in beside her, then poignantly held a lacy handkerchief to her nose.
"Sorry,"
Atlas muttered with embarrassment. Lovett left her place at the table and kneeled beside the largest pentacle in the very center of the room. Unlike the summoning levers that they had been using, this pentacle was surrounded by the strange keys that had been etched into the front of James Baker's book.
"You are never to use a keyed pentacle without a teacher present. Is that understood?"
she growled, pointing at the star in front of her.
"Breaking this rule is grounds for immediate expulsion. You have been warned."
The students nodded dumbly as she powered up the pentacle, the lines crackling with energy and spitting sparks in all directions. This time, Lovett stayed with her head bowed for several minutes, her face contorted with concentration. The pentacle was pulsing with a volatile buzz, wavering like the incessant humming of a madman.
"Wow! If it takes Lovett this long, I didn't think I could use a keyed pentacle, even if I wanted to,"
Seraph whispered next to him.
"I can barely infuse Sliver without almost passing out." "Don't worry. I'm sure with practice we will manage it,"
Fletcher murmured back. Finally, a sphere expanded in the center of the star and hung in the air like a dim blue sun. Lovett panted and then shuffled over to the next pentacle on her knees. With a soft touch, she released a demon into existence above it.
"A mite,"
Genevieve whispered to Rory. Lovett heard and turned around with a tired smile.
"That's right. They make the best scouts, always needed when hunting in the ether. Valens is the first demon I ever owned. Without him, I would never have managed to capture Lysander, or any of the demons I had before him, for that matter."
She strode back to the table and placed one hand on the white sheet that covered it. In the other hand, she held a long strip of leather that connected to the base of the keyed pentacle. Fletcher suspected it was so she could keep the mana flowing to it.
What I'm about to show you is the most expensive equipment in the entire academy. Do not touch it. Don't even breathe on it. Just watch.
Lovett hissed, looking them each in the eye until they were all nodding. With that last warning, she whipped off the cloth and revealed what was underneath. An enormous gemstone was set in a white marble counter. The crystal was as clear as a mountain stream, and its colouring was the deep purple of wild heather.
"The gemstone is a very rare type of crystal called corundum," Lovett said. "It forms in almost every colour, but large transparent pieces such as this are incredibly hard to find. We call them scrying stones, although this particular gem is known as the Oculus. We will provide you with one if you cannot afford to buy one for yourself, although you may find the quality and size of the Academy's pieces quite, lacking."
Lovett beckoned Valance over, and the little creature flew over their heads, settling on the gem. Unlike Malachi and Azura, the mite shell was a boring dark brown. As if she could read Fletcher's mind, Lovett smiled at him knowingly and stroked the beetle demon's carapace.
"Valens is well suited to his job. He won't look pretty on my shoulder, but he will be harder to spot if a hungry demon comes by in the ether."
Fletcher had a brief recollection of Ignatius eating a brown beetle when he had first summoned him. But that thing had been much smaller than any of the mites he had seen. Perhaps it was a different species.
"Right, let's get this show on the road. You must push the mana through the demon and into the stone, like this," she said,
laying her free hand over Valance. The gemstone turned black. As she removed her hand, the color changed again. At first, Fletcher thought the gemstone had become a mirror, finding himself staring at an image of his own face. But soon the image flicked to Seraph's.
"You are now looking through Valance's eyes. It is a technique that we call scrying. Very useful for scouting and controlling your demons from afar. We can already sense the demon's thoughts. Now we can also see what they can in the crystal. It is essential to check what is on the other side of the portal with your least important demon before entering the ether. Should there be something dangerous on the other side, when he comes through, it will be Valens at risk rather than Lysander. Because a mite is smaller and more agile, he is less likely to be noticed and can escape more easily."
The image shook as Valens buzzed into the air and hovered just in front of the spinning blue orb. Lovett clicked her tongue, and with that, the demon whipped into the orb like a gunshot. The first thing Fletcher saw in the stone was the red-tinged ground. Fine grains of rusty sand swirled above it, churned into dust devils by a seething wind. The sky was the orange of sunrise, yet it held no warmth, nor was there a source of light in the sky. Stunted trees dotted the landscape, their sparse branches contorted in rigor mortis. There was no life here, just a dry husk of a land, long dead.
"Perfect," Lovett said. "We have emerged in the Deadlands."
"Deadlands?"
Rory asked in an awestruck voice.
"Entering the ether is not an exact science. There is a large margin of error in where we might come out. The Deadlands come with positives and negatives, depending on your purpose. There will be nothing to surprise you here. But if you are trying to capture a demon, you will have to drag it quite a distance to get back to the portal. If I was hunting, I would close this portal and open a new one. But for the purposes of this exercise, it is ideal. The Deadlands are between the void and the outer circle of the inhabited ether,"
Lovett replied in a strained voice. Fletcher could see a vein pulsing in her forehead. Entering the ether must take a lot of power and concentration. Valance turned and flew away from the portal, his altitude rising steadily. It was silent in the room, the only sound Lovett's heavy breathing, as the minutes ticked by. The landscape seemed to get even more desolate, with fewer and fewer trees, until all they could see was flat, raw earth.
"How do you know where to go?" Tarquin asked. "It all looks the same to me."
Fletcher realized that was a good question. The young noble was a lot of things, but he was not stupid.
"The portal always faces the center of the ether when your demon comes out, so you are orientated as soon as you enter. Additionally, all demons are drawn to the center instinctually, and they have an internal compass that tells them where it is. I can guide myself using this, but it takes practice and is not very accurate. That is why it is always risky entering the ether. I can only hold the portal open for so long, and if I close it before Valens gets through, our bond will be broken, and I will lose him,"
Lovett lectured back. Tarquin opened his mouth to ask another question, but Fletcher got there first.
"What do you mean by the center? Does that mean the ether has a shape?"
he asked, trying to understand.
"As far as we know, the ether is disc-shaped. The weaker demons tend to stay in the outer rings, with more powerful demons gravitating to the center. There seems to be a rudimentary food chain, with low-level mites on the very bottom, closest to the Deadlands."
Tarquin began to speak again, but Lovett held up a hand to silence him.
"Save your questions for later. It is hard enough holding the portal open and guiding Valens without thinking of answers for you."
Even as she spoke, the pentacle flickered. She grunted, and it glowed a steady violet once again. Despite the intensity of the lesson, Fletcher felt himself relax, perhaps for the very first time. Everyone was learning something here, even Tarquin. It all made so much sense to Fletcher, as if he were remembering something long forgotten. He was meant for this. The horizon began to fall away, darkening dramatically. The glow of the sky faded into a pure, starless black, yet the little mite flew higher and higher. Finally, he stopped and turned his view downwards once again.
"Look closely. You will see them,"
Lovett said, her voice taut with exertion. The land cut off in a neat line, creating the perfect precipice of a cliff that fell away into murky darkness below. Fletcher could see that the cliff line stretched on far into the distance, almost imperceptibly curving as they faded out of sight. He realized that the disc must be enormous, larger than 1,000 hominems. "This would not be a good place to get lost," he thought grimly. His line of thought was broken as he saw something stir in the abyss. As the beetle demon's eyes adjusted to the dark, a seething mass came into view. It twisted and writhed tortuously, a tangled chaos of tentacles, eyes, and jagged teeth.
"Citians!"
Silver breathed in quiet horror.
"Aye, Citians! You've done your homework, Silver,"
Lovett uttered darkly, wiping sweat from her brow.
"Some call them the Old Ones. They starve down there, cannibalizing each other as they wait. The Citians will snatch any demon that wanders this far, usually the sick or the injured, trying to find somewhere to recover. That is why we must fly so high. This is the one and only time I will risk coming near them, so learn this lesson well. Stay away from here."
Valens turned and flew back the way they had come. This time, there were no questions as the group mulled over the nightmarish creatures they had just seen. The giant monsters were grotesque and tortured beings. Of that, Fletcher was certain. Though he could not hear anything, he could imagine their tormented screams in his head. The blue orb that was the portal came into view once more, but Valens flew over it. With his current height, they made good time, the land rushing underneath like fallen leaves in a river. Fletcher wondered what it was like for Lovett, riding on a griffin over the battlefield, then felt a pang of jealousy when he realized he would never be able to ride Ignatius.
"I will quickly show you where the hunting grounds begin. Then I must get back,"
Lovett spat through gritted teeth.
"Normally, I can go for much longer, but I am not yet recovered from the capture of Atlas's Lutra a few days ago. I was lucky that Provost Scipio was there to harness it.
Harness?
Rory asked. Lovett ignored him, instead pointing at the gemstone. The world had turned green. Valens was looking over a forest, though the vegetation was not one Fletcher recognized. Above it, he saw flocks of flying demons in the distance, swooping and turning like starlings. A swarm of tiny mites flew low above the trees, before scattering as a large mite, not unlike Valens, snatched one of them from the air. Far in the distance, ash clouds stained the sky. Below them, lava-tipped volcanoes spewed pillars of smoke, hanging in the air like columns supporting the heavens. Something hit Valens with brutal force, knocking him out of the sky. Lovett cried out in pain as the image spun like a kaleidoscope, trees rushing up to meet them. The stone turned black as ink. 35. The group stared at the black stone in horror, holding their breaths. Lovett was clutching her leather tether with a white-knuckled grip, as the pentacle spat violet sparks, sizzling and smoking on the leather around them with the stench of burning hair. The oculus flickered into life. The image was fuzzy and unfocused, but it panned slowly as Valens looked at the iridescent treetops above. The little demon was alive.
"I was afraid of this," Lovett muttered. "This is the time of year that the shrikes migrate across our hunting grounds. In previous years, I would wait until next month to begin with your lesson in the ether. But with you first years taking part in the tournament, I had to move it up. Damn Scipio and his rush to get you on the battlefield. In his day, there were 5 years of study before graduation. He should know better."
She cursed long and hard, her tirade blacker than a Vesanian sailor's. Fletcher's ears reddened at her colourful language, but he smiled to himself. Lovett could swear with the best of them. He tried to picture a shrike from his studies, but could only remember that it was a dangerous bird-like creature that visited Homonym's part of the ether.
"The shrike will be coming back, but Valens has hurt one of his wings. He's going to have to race to the portal. There's no way he can fight a shrike. It is 3 classes above him. Maybe 5, if it's the matriarch in their flock."
The last sentence meant little to Fletcher, but he wondered what class ranking Ignatius would fall under. As the mite buzzed into life and jerked into the air, his thoughts turned back to the task at hand. The poor demon flew slowly, hampered by his injured wing. He skimmed over the barren desert, buffeted by the low winds that spun the dust across his vision. As the minutes ticked by excruciatingly slowly, Fletcher noticed something ahead of them. It was a shadow, though of what, Fletcher was not certain.
"There's something above us," he said, pointing at the black shape on the stone.
"I know. It has been with us since the forest. Shrikes like to injure their prey with a surprise attack, then follow the victim from above until it collapses from its wounds. It is an effective technique, but it will work to our advantage today. Wild demons have an almost instinctual fear of portals, so it is rare for one to come through unless we drag it in. If we can get Valens to come through the portal, the shrike will leave him alone. Then I can infuse him, and he will heal just fine. I just hope he can make it," Lovett replied, pushing a sweaty strand of hair from out of her eyes.
Finally, the portal appeared on the horizon. It was not a moment too soon, for Valens's flight was becoming jerky, and the oculus's image was dimming with worrying frequency.
"Just a little further," Lovett hissed, her brow furrowed in concentration.
But the mite had gone as far as he could go. Valens tumbled to the ground, a few feet from the portal, landing in a puff of dust. He lay motionless. The only sign he was still alive was the glow of the stone, still showing the plumes of dust as they twisted in the wind's eddies.
"Quick! Get me in the ether gear! Now! It's in the last cupboard on the far wall! I don't know how long we have left!"
Seraph was the first to react, sprinting to the back of the room and heaving out a bulky package.
"I need help! It's heavy!"
he shouted. Othello hastened to his assistance, and together they hauled it to Lovett. Fletcher continued to stare into the stone. The shadow had swooped by again.
"Can't I send Ignatius in to get him?" Fletcher asked.
"No, our manners would merge if your demon entered through my portal. Mixing manners is difficult to master. If you fail on the first attempt, the portal will close, and we will lose Valens for good."
Lovett was struggling to get into what looked like a bulky one-piece suit. It was made of heavy leather, with steel-capped boots on the bottom half, and a metal ring around the neck on the top. Once her feet were in, Lovett attached a long leather tether that powered the pentacle to another that extended from the back of her suit, several meters long. There was a long, empty hose connected to a helmet on the floor, coiled in several loops.
"Stretch my air pipe out, Seraph! I need a clear airway!"
Lovett demanded, lifting the helmet, which had a metal ring along the bottom. As Seraph unraveled the hose, she clicked it into place above her neck.
"It needs to be airtight,"
she shouted in a muffled voice.
"The ether's air is poisonous to us. If I get a hole in my suit, pull me out immediately using the tether, whether I have collected Valens or not."
"It's just a mite. Why risk your life for something you could capture another of tomorrow?"
Tarquin asked, his voice filled with skepticism. Lovett turned towards him, her face barely visible. The helmet was made of copper, with a round pane of thick glass on the front. There was a cage built over the small window to keep it from shattering.
"A demon is not an item to be tossed aside like an old shirt,"
she snapped.
"When you have battled with yours, side by side, maybe you'll understand."
With those parting words, she stepped into the portal. They saw Lovett step out on the gemstone, a hazy brown figure swimming into Valens's view. It was so strange to see her move from the blue-tinged gloom of the summoning room to the scorching sky of the ether in just a few seconds. Yet there she was, stomping through the dust towards the mite with slow, measured strides. Soon her gloved hand scooped Valens up and brought the demon to the front of her helmet. They could see her grey eyes flashing through the glass with equal amounts of fear and concern, before she turned and trudged back to the portal.
"Why is she moving so slowly?"
Genevieve whispered.
"She's wearing a heavy suit in a scorching desert, whilst maintaining a portal to another world and controlling a dying demon simultaneously. It's a miracle she is still standing at all,"
Tarquin said in a lofty tone.
"If that portal closes, she will be trapped there for as long as it takes for the poison to kill her after her air pipe gets snipped in two. Foolish woman."
"She's going to make it," Fletcher murmured, willing her onwards as she took step after staggering step.
It was Othello who saw it first, a small black spot in the sky, growing larger by the second. He pointed at it with curiosity, then wide-eyed horror as a feathered demon expanded into view. Lovett had seemingly noticed too, for her pace quickened and the pentacle cracked dangerously as her concentration slipped. The shrike was a giant bird with long black feathers. The wingspan was as wide as Fletcher was tall, the endmost feathers tipped with bleached white. Its lethal beak was hooked cruelly, with a bright red wattle underneath its neck and a red ridge along the top of its head, like that of a rooster. It reminded Fletcher of an enormous, ugly vulture. The bird demon dived towards Lovett, its bright orange talons outstretched. She ducked down, but it was too late. The talons scored along her helmet with brutal accuracy. They caught in the helmet's cage, dragging her over onto her back. The hooked beak stabbed down again and again, yet all it did was dent the copper helmet.
"Pull her in!" Fletcher yelled. "She has Valens in her hand!"
He grabbed the tether and heaved, stretching the thick leather until it creaked under the strain. The others soon followed suit. Even Isadora daintily clutched the lead and pulled with the others. They made fast progress, extracting several feet of it through the crackling portal. Fletcher glanced back at the scrying stone, but could only see flashes of feathers against the bronze sky as the demon continued to peck violently. The strain on the leather lifted as Lovett managed to stumble to her feet. Then she fell through the portal in a tangle of limbs. Even as the group began to cheer, their voices caught in their throats as realization dawned. She was not alone. The shrike emitted a harsh caw, then spread its wings wide and stepped onto the ground, standing almost as tall as a man. It squinted its fierce yellow eyes in the dim light, then advanced in a strange hopping motion, like it was playing a macabre game of hopscotch. Lovett lay motionless on the ground. Something was terribly wrong.
"Stand back!"
Tarquin yelled, putting himself squarely in the shrike's way. Fletcher may have disliked the boy, but he was impressed. Tarquin had some courage. The young noble kneeled quickly and put his hands on the ground, powering up the nearest pentacle. In moments, a demon formed above it, then charged at the shrike without hesitation. Tarquin's demon was a hydra, with three reptilian heads on long, powerful necks, like a trio of snakes attached to the body of a monitor lizard. They weaved and snapped at the shrike, darting this way and that, as the bird demon was driven back towards the portal. They were well matched, since Tarquin's demon was large enough to ride, though much of its height comprised of neck. The hydra's legs were short, but each foot was equipped with thick black claws that tore into the leather with every step.
"Nothing can stand against Trebius!"
Tarquin yelled as the shrike squawked with confusion at the three-pronged attack. Fletcher ignored the fight and circled around to Lovett. She must have been conscious, as the portal was still open, but her body was as still as a corpse. Valens was twitching in her open hand, buzzing as the shrike battled Tarquin's demon. The little mite wanted to help, but did not have the strength.
"I'll get a teacher!"
Genevieve yelled, then ran out of the door. Fletcher kneeled beside Lovett and dragged her out of harm's way, then removed her helmet with care. His eyes widened at what he saw beneath. Her mouth was foaming with froth, and both eyes were rolled so far back that all he could see was white. The poor woman's head bounced punishingly on the leather as her body was racked with convulsions. Fletcher had no idea how she was still holding the portal open.
"The poison!"
Fletcher gasped with horror, trying to cushion the back of her skull with his hands. His eyes fell on the helmet, and he saw a deep crack in the glass on the front. The shrike's claws must have damaged it in the first attack. He turned to the bird demon in anger, watching as it stopped just a few feet from the portal. In such close proximity, the fear of the portal seemingly outweighed its fear of the hydra. The shrike took a hesitant step forward and stabbed its beak at the nearest hydra head, drawing blood and a cry of dismay from Tarquin. But the noble did not need to fight alone.
"Ignatius!"
Fletcher yelled, powering up the pentacle nearest to him and summoning his demon with an angry blast of mana. The salamander formed in but a moment, then leaped into the fray with a screech. Despite the fact that the shrike was many times his size, Ignatius bit into the bird demon's leg, stabbing it repeatedly with his tail spike. The shrike squawked with pain and alarm, losing its footing and falling back towards the pentacle. The hydra took the opportunity without hesitation, lumbering forward and sinking all three sets of fangs into the shrike's neck. The momentum took the demons, in a tangle of writhing claws and teeth, to the very edge of the portal, screeching and howling like banshees.
"Now, Ignatius!"
Fletcher yelled, wary of the demons falling through the unstable portal and losing them all for good. The imp rolled away from the melee and blasted a plume of flame, scorching the air above the hydra and the shrike. That was the last straw. The shrike took one last swipe at the hydra with its talons, then leaped back into the portal with a disappointed squawk, leaving the hydra snapping at thin air. Moments later, the portal closed up, shrinking into nothingness. The weird light soon followed suit, dissipating in threads of blue light until the room was pitch black. Lovett gave a deep sigh, then her body relaxed. Fletcher was relieved to feel her chest continue to raggedly rise and fall. The novitiates roared in triumph, but their happiness was short-lived as they heard Lovett's choked breathing in the darkness.